Hi, everyone. I promise we are going to wrap up 1977 today.
Well, not 1977 entirely.
True. And I saw Dorchester in your show notes. You're dragging us back to Massachusetts again.
No, no. The ship that was connected to the murder spree we're talking about today was named the Dorchester. We're not going to Dorchester.
You have me all messed up. So tell us about the ship named Dorchester.
Okay, but first we got to go to Jamestown.
Like in Virginia?
No, no. Jamestown, Rhode Island, Newport County. I swear I know more about Rhode Island than you do now.
Mm-hmm.
And just to geek out on all of you just a little bit more, did you know that Narragansett Bay was first sighted in 1524 by an Italian explorer named Giovanni de Verrazzano? So the Italian links to Rhode Island run really deep.
I had absolutely no idea, and I wonder if any of our listeners knew.
Well, you learned something new today.
I'm thankful that you gave me that information.
Okay, well, let's talk about Jamestown. On August 5th, 1977, authorities described as a 48-year-old converted fishing vessel flying a Jamaican flag drifted toward Jamestown, where it was spotted by the authorities. None of the dozen crew members had documents and none spoke English. There was no captain and no records on board. Reportedly, the rudder had broken and the ship needed repairs. The authorities were eventually forced to let the boat go since they couldn't find enough evidence to arrest anyone aboard.
Where was the crew from?
They were all Colombian.
All right, so what happened next?
So 10 days later, the newspapers reported that the so-called fishing boat had been smuggling drugs, specifically marijuana, and that the authorities had found a cache of 4 50-pound bales of it. In addition, a raid of a local waterfront estate in Jamestown that was owned by a diplomat, by the way, netted $20,000 worth of cocaine, 5 handguns, and 4 parachutes. 20 people were arrested, half of whom were from Florida.
Do you think they were dropping the weed and coke by parachute?
Oh, maybe. That didn't really occur to me, but I guess.
Okay.
Then nearly 300 bales of marijuana were found in the cellar of a Warwick home near the TF Green Airport on August 17th after a neighbor called the cops shortly after midnight. The 5.5 tons of pot were valued at $9 million. A second raid in North Kingstown that same morning netted another $150,000 worth of drugs and records related to the international smuggling operation. 2 more men were arrested, Daniel Leonard and Elliot Bassett.
Now, Elliot Bassett turned up dead 8 months later in New York. It was revealed during the investigation that the smuggling ring was being bankrolled by the infamous financier Robert Lee Vesco. He deserves an episode of his own, even though it's a little out of our lane. Cuba, Castro, Nixon, narcotics, Sandinistas, and all that other fun stuff.
Well, maybe we can add them to our Spies and Wise Guys mini-series spinoff episode list.
For sure. All right, so sorry for the diversion, but we will get back to Bassett at the end of this episode. Now take us back to the bales of weed.
Well, it really was a nonstop weed fest. 2 days later, on August 19th, another 47 bales of marijuana were found at a different property in Jamestown. A local DEA agent told the press, quote, intelligence reports have it that the nucleus of this group is from Rhode Island. We suspect they are bringing drugs into Maine, Cape Cod, Rhode Island, and into Canada. According to him, 20 trucks, 6 airplanes, and 4 boats were used in the operation. 2 days later, on the 21st, the Providence Journal reported that law enforcement in Florida had been trailing the drug smugglers for 3 years in 36 states and 3 countries.
And all that weed, $9 million worth, and it ended up in a Navy incinerator just a few days later.
And no worries, there was still more to come. That day, the day after the burning, 5th drug raid took place in Richmond, Rhode Island. This time, the estimated street value was $1 million.
Think about that, 5 raids in 11 days.
I know, and you know someone had to be talking.
For sure, but who?
And they kept talking because 2 weeks later, a hunter and shrimp boat with $9 million worth of what the authorities called Colombian gold marijuana and its Colombian crew were seized off the coast of Massachusetts.
In November, a Rhode Island grand jury handed down indictments against several Broward County, Florida men, including the Jennison brothers, who were allegedly laundering the proceeds of the smuggling ring through their oil company and other firms that they own.
Well, one of the Jennison boys was talking to the DEA. It came out later, but...
Okay, well, there's one of our informants...
And now, okay, so with the drug smuggling story laid out, let's talk about the victims. On August 8th of that year, Ralph Imperatore and Billy Lavin went missing after Lavin docked his boat at the Flying Bridge restaurant that was owned by Gerald Tillinghast.
So just 3 days after the ghost ship was found in Jamestown.
Exactly.
Do you think that maybe they were giving up information too, or were they competition?
Well, I didn't think about the possibility that someone might have suspected them of cooperating. I was thinking more along the lines that they knew too much.
All right, we'll get back to our theories a little bit later, but you get back to the dock.
Okay. Witnesses said they heard Tillinghast call out to Lavin, "Hey, little man." Then 20 minutes later, Imperatore was on that same dock arguing with a girlfriend who was begging him not to leave. Witnesses also said that they saw and heard George Vasmasian pleading with Imperatore to leave with him. "Let's go, Ralph." That was the last anyone ever saw of the duo, and Vasmasian wasn't long for this world either.
The month before their murders, the duo had gone into business together. They opened a place called Club Cabaret in Johnston, Rhode Island. Torrey was supposedly smuggling drugs, in particular marijuana, and according to rumors, he had $120,000 buried in the backyard of his house in Clayville. The story goes that Tillinghast knew and he wanted a piece of it.
Well, Tillinghast and I believe Ponytail Perillo didn't get to Imperatore's stash because the Stadies found the $120,000 right where it was supposed to be, in Imperatore's backyard. A second box was also discovered. It contained a .38 caliber revolver, ammo, blank social security cards, blank driver's licenses from Oregon, and a diamond cluster in the shape of a star. And please don't ask me if it was a mug and David.
Save me from your scolding, okay? I'm going to stick with the topic at hand. And the fact that the authorities got there before Imperatore and Lavin's killers did still leads me to believe that someone was feeding the authorities information.
Hey, save your theories for the end.
All right. It would be 18 months before Imperatore and Lavin's bodies would be discovered in a Conimicut Point. Is that the correct pronunciation, you think? Conimicut?
I guess.
Okay, Conimicut Point in Warwick. Someone will correct me if I'm wrong. On April 10th of 1979, a real estate agent was showing the property when her 10-year-old daughter discovered a skull.
Those poor kids in Rhode Island, they were always finding dead people.
Talk about traumatized. When the authorities arrived, they discovered Imperatore and Lavin, who were wrapped together in a blanket and buried under an inch-thick layer of concrete. Authorities believe they had been kidnapped from the marina outside of Tillinghast's restaurant, then tortured in an effort to obtain the whereabouts of the stash, and then shot.
That discovery led to another hunt on the site for bodies of other missing gangsters, but the authorities were eventually forced to give up when no one else was found. Shades of Stevie Fleming. Just had to get that in that little jab in there.
I know you did.
Okay. Over 2 years later, in October of 79, Gerald Tillinghast was indicted for the double homicide. Just 2 months earlier, Tillinghast had been convicted in August for the 1978 murder of George Vasmasian. And Vasmasian was an unindicted co-conspirator in the double homicide of Imperatore and Lavin.
Those charges were eventually dropped against Tillinghast, and no one has ever been convicted of Imperatore and Lavin slayings. Now back to 1977. On August 29th, Gerald D. Twidgey Christie of Rhode Island was found murdered and mauled en masse after having gone missing 4 days before. He was last seen at a motel in Attleboro, Mass. His body was found in a sleeping bag in the back of a stolen station wagon with his hands and his feet bound. He had been garroted with piano wire. Law enforcement believed he wasn't loyal to his crew, which was said to be the Tillinghast brothers, Vasmagian, Perillo, and others. Shortly after Christie's murder, an informant told his FBI handler that Christie had recently made a big score and refused to kick up to Patriaca. Allegedly, Patriaca had also told Christie to stop shaking down people on Federal Hill, but Christie had ignored the order. A series of unreported robberies had been taking place at the social clubs on Federal Hill and Silver Lakes for several months prior to Christie's slaying. He was a suspect in several other stick-ups, but the holdups of the social clubs continued after he was killed.
So that's a dead end.
Yeah. Yes.
And I don't know. This whole story, I don't really think Patriarca was involved, like, at all, I have to say.
No, but you know, it's the usual informant thing, because everybody had to drag Raymond into every single tale that they told.
Yeah. So, okay, but mob fun fact, Gerald Christie was the boyhood friend of Charles White and Richard Beccari. He was also friends with Junior Patriarca, who attended his funeral. In 1974, Guido de Arezzo shot himself in the mouth at Christie's home. Evidently, it really was an accident, and the bullet deflected off of his denture and lodged in his spine, and he survived.
I guess they skipped the handgun safety class. And isn't it Guido, not Guido?
I don't know. I'm not Italian enough to help with give you that.
I think on that one, I can be an authority and say that it's Guido. I actually know people named Guido. Okay, on to the next two murders. Christie's cousin, Ronald Leone, 28 of Johnston, and his best friend, 17-year-old Rudy Baronet, went missing on October 3rd after leaving Leone's family home, supposedly to meet up with a friend. Their bodies have never been recovered.
Rocco DeSantis, who would go missing in late 78, was believed to have been killed because he helped dispose of their bodies. DeSantis supposedly was doing stick-ups with Barilla, including a milk store robbery in the very busy Olneyville that happened on October 22, 1978. Barilla was indicted for that holdup on March 9, 1982, and the murders of Leone and Baronet. This was the first case in Rhode Island where no bodies were found, but the state charged the perpetrator anyway.
The authorities believe that the series of killings that began in August of 1977 with the slayings of Imperatore and Lavin were all connected through the marijuana smuggling. They were convinced that Basmagian Tillinghast, Leone, and his cousin Gerald Christie killed Imperatore and Lavin. Then Tillinghast and Basmagian killed Christie. Running short on manpower, Tillinghast enlisted the help of Perillo to take out Leone, mainly because he was Christie's cousin and they worried he would seek revenge. Baronet was just an innocent bystander who was in the wrong place at the wrong time.
As we mentioned earlier, Basmagian was killed on November 20th, 1978, and the Tillinghast brothers were convicted and given life sentences for his murder. Dennis Roach, who was married to Leone's sister, was believed to have been involved in killing the pair along with Perillo. He turned up dead in December of 81. The police told her about her husband's role in her brother's death the day Perillo was charged. He had been shot and his face had been run over, and Roach's death ended the string of murders. We'll revisit this later in the season.
But there was another homicide in 1977 that at a minimum was linked to these guys, if not the marijuana, and that was the murder of Cesar Leyda on December 15th.
So Leyda had immigrated to the U.S. from the Philippines with his family in 1960, first to New York and then to Rhode Island. He enlisted in the Navy, where he served for 7 years. In 1969, he killed two sailors in a knife fight at the Newport Naval Base. He himself was seriously wounded. He was acquitted of those charges, but was convicted of breaking and entering in 1970 and sentenced to 18 months in the New Bedford House of Correction. He ran a TV repair service on Atwell's Ave. His hobbies were judo and karate. Shortly before he was killed, he had been convicted of taking bets on the Daily Number, but was given probation. And he helped organize the first Filipino festival in Rhode Island earlier that summer.
I think that Leyda was in the robbery ring that Perillo was running. Leyda's partner in the electronics store, Champlain, robbed the same convenience store where Perillo was shaking down that kid a few years before all of this. That's where Perillo ended up in the work release sentence at the ACI and had to pay for his own room and board. And Leyda was definitely involved in the marijuana smuggling.
Okay, but let's finish with the other theories.
You were really so abusive and pushy today.
Hold your horses. So the authorities tried to say that Leyda was wrapped up with the Wamets. Their theory was that he had a falling out with them and that it was likely since Jerry had been released from prison the month before. But I'm not sure that I believe that, particularly given that he was found in the same vicinity as Basmagian would be found less than a year later. Leyda had been shot in the head with a .38 caliber revolver and stuffed behind the spare tire in the trunk of his black Cadillac. The car had been parked there for five days before the cops came to investigate.
The theory that Basmagian killed him makes much more sense considering where Basmagian would be found later, as you said. That was a message of sorts. It had to be. Okay, but back to Bassett from the beginning. A few days before Bassett took a Dixie off the 23rd floor balcony of the St. Moritz Hotel in New York, Tillinghast and Basmagian had reserved plane tickets to go to New York. The reservations were never kept. Not that New York City wasn't under a four-hour car right away, so they could have easily gotten. But Bassett had met with them in Warwick before he left for New York. The Rhode Island Stateys claimed that those same men that met with Bassett were the ones who killed Leyda. The motive for killing Bassett was plain and simple. He was being hit with drug charges, and they couldn't trust him not to flip on them.
And they got away with it. There was no evidence of foul play, and Bassett's death was ruled a suicide.
Well, we'll be revisiting many of these stories again later in the season. Do you want to wrap it up today, or do you have something else?
No, but I am interested to hear what our listeners think about all these homicides being linked back to the marijuana smuggling.
Indeed, so write to us, guys. And what are we doing next week?
Blackfriars.
Okay, we're moving on. It's progress.
Well, so, we can keep it to one episode, maybe.
Maybe. All right, everyone. Thank you for listening. Bye. Bye.